Hey, can you come over here for a second? I know you're on your way to go in and see the boss, but I could use your help. See, I...
Benny!
yeah, boss?
What are you doing?
Nothing, boss. I was just taking out some trash to, you know, the compost pile, and I bumped into our new guest here, so I thought I'd pass the time. Well, good evening, folks. I'll leave you to your business, and I'll just be getting to mine.
Excuse me a moment. I need to have a word with my steward. I've poured fresh cider at the bar. Please enjoy it until I come to finalize your arrangements.
Oh, man. I'm in trouble now. Boss must think I was trying to do something shady, but I specifically told everyone I wasn't being shady, and I meant it. Oh, I don't... What's going on? Oh.
Benny, how are your studies coming along?
Oh, boss, can I just say how sorry I am that...
Wait a minute. What?
I'll admit that I don't make my way to the Palladium as often as I should, but I was having a drink with my archivist friend Lysander. They told me that they'd entered a new class of trainees into the role when they noticed a new name that was familiar to them. Now, there may be Benny Longfellows in the realm other than yourself, but it didn't take me long to put everything together.
Wait a minute. Lysander? Boss, wasn't that like a month ago?
Yes. Yes, it was.
You've known this whole time and you weren't upset?
I'm not upset that you didn't tell me. I can appreciate your intentions to surprise me, and another recognized keeper can only improve our efforts. I've no desire to maintain some foolish hierarchy to make myself feel better. If anything, I'm upset that it took you so long before you started fulfilling your obligation. My name carries some weight in those halls, even if not nearly as much as it used to. You are representing the Bard and Bible. I never want to hear another word about you missing deadlines. Am I clear?
Oh, yes, sir, boss. Absolutely. Does that mean I can...
Off you go, then. They've probably finished their drinks by now. Don't leave them waiting.
Oh, you got it, boss. I'm gonna get... pardon me a sec. Hello, weary traveler. My name is Benny Longfellow, and this is the Bard and Bible. Excellent. You're still drinking. While you finish your ciders, allow me to regale you with a point of interest you may enjoy while you are in town. As geeks, we don't argue whether axes are superior to swords. We discuss how many apprentice gnomes it takes to slay an ancient red dragon. I will still say it's 42. Maybe less, I was thinking about it, maybe less if some of them are barbarians, but it's still pretty close. As geeks, we delve into the depths of our fandom because they have shaped so much of who we are. Shouldn't the same be true about our faith? Thy Geekdom Come is a devotional series for Christian geeks who don't like devotionals, who want a devotional that will go in depth into both our lives as geeks and our faith. Thy Geekdom Come Volume 2 and a 5-day free version is now available at geekdevo.com/bardandbible. I made up a little card that just says it right on there. You can keep that for yourself.
Well done, Benny. Well done. Tonight's tale, No Quarrel. God has really been impacting me with the idea that sometimes we want to reduce meditating on the scriptures and really indwelling the word of God and being in it and letting it wash over us and let it just be so much of how God speaks to us. And I think we reduce it to a collection of memory verses. So the idea of spending more time in the Bible equates to gathering more memory verses. Now, if you've been a listener of this podcast for a while, or if you just happen to follow any of our social media, because I do most of our social media, you'll have heard me say, I'm garbage at memorizing scripture. I'm garbage at memorizing most things, and scripture just happens to be one of most things. So I've been kind of wrestling with the idea of what does it mean to abide in these scriptures? What does it mean to rest and think through and meditate constantly on these phrases? And sometimes God helps me out by bringing a series of random stuff. Some of it random, some of it, you know, planned, because, you know, part of the reason that this episode has been delayed as far as it was is because of there was a family holiday where I got to actually go in the, I've never been so thankful of being able to do this in my life. We actually were able to, because of vaccinations and masks and loosening grips on things, we were able to go to New Jersey to see my family for the first time in a while. And so it was great. So there was that plan. There was some other stuff that I won't go into, just kind of happened. But what it meant was that we had another one of these moments where I got to spend a lot more time on, you know, reading and rethinking and restructuring what I had for Genesis 13 and what I think God wanted me to say. And really, sometimes I have that happen before I've ever, you know, set to the mic, before I've ever said anything or recorded anything. I'll tell you what, if there's ever a lost episode of Bard and Bible, it is the first pass I did on Genesis 13. I had most of an episode done, but I scrapped it. I scrapped it because I was missing the point. And I knew I was missing the point. I got caught up in the weeds of this. And part of that is just the literary nature. The storyteller in me was fascinated by the choices that were made here. I love the fact that it stresses real strong that this isn't like just metaphorically where it all began, that this is literally the place. They are standing on the same ground where Abram and his family made their tents. He is standing on the same ground where God promised him that this land was his for the taking. And this is the same ground that Abram built an altar. I love that the text points that out so clearly, because in a way it strikes me funny, because it turns the land of Egypt into a side quest. Now, if you're listening to this more from the devotional side and less from the gaming side, you might not know what I'm talking about. If you've ever played any kind of role-playing game, it's especially true in video games, but it happens in pen and paper too, there's such a thing as called a side quest, where, for all intents and purposes, you could not do that. You could not do this thing, and the story would continue as expected. It's a bump in the road. But if you choose to go on that side quest, you become stronger, you get more stuff, you might see some more things, make some more friends. And really, the first part of Genesis 13 does make Genesis 12 seem like a side quest. There was a famine that sent them to Egypt. Lots of crazy stuff happened. They come back to this exact same spot, but just with more stuff, so much stuff, in fact, that Abram and Lot realize we can't still be together anymore. Because if we're still together, our cows will literally strip all the grass off the land. Our workers are going to be, you know, killing each other over this stuff, just trying to do their job. We need to break apart. So again, there's part of me that really loves that fact that we are exactly in the right spot. This wasn't like something that God didn't see coming. This was actually something that God sent them on. Well, I'm a big proponent of God doesn't send famine. God is a God who gives us good gifts. If a human father will give good gifts, how much more our heavenly father? But God sees this famine coming and says, no, we're going to go to Egypt. I'm going to show you some things. We're going to redeem this, and you're going to be better off than you were. Because I do, while I don't believe God gives bad things, I do believe that God is in the redemption business of bad things. So there's that. I'm also tickled by the fact that there's kind of like chapter 14 spoilers in this. So if Genesis 13, the first half of it, kind of wraps up Genesis 12, the middle and tail end of it kind of hints to the fact that something real bad's about to happen in Genesis 14. Because remember, this is a book that is written to, you know, about past events, but for a people that these events have already happened long ago. It was oral tradition that was written down. So they know that Sodom and Gomorrah is happening. We're going to get there. And in fact, I'm not looking forward to the fact that we get there next chapter. But here we are. We will save that headache and explaining what that story does for that episode. For now, I just enjoy the fact that, you know, they can't just let this go. Part of me wonders if this is just, you know, like setting it up for in case you want to like feel better about the fact that you're cheering for these people to be utterly destroyed. This is basically Moses sitting there going, no, it's okay. Remember, these people are awful. It's okay what's going to happen to them. These people are truly terrible. Because twice we have these sentences, one that's in a parenthetical and one that's just kind of just straight out saying it blatantly, just pointing out just how awful they are. The parenthetical, this is before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. And then in 13 was like, no, seriously, these guys were awful and great sinners against the Lord. So we have the wrap up of Genesis 12 in the beginning. You have this kind of spoilerific kind of section that says Genesis 14 and Sodom and Gomorrah is coming, gear up. And when I first recorded this, I think I was just getting caught up in the weeds of some of that because I'm a literary nerd and I'm like, there's some fun stuff happening here that yes, the Bible is a holy book. Yes, it is the inspired word of God, but yes, it is also a piece of literature. And the literary turns here that we're making, the choices, because they could have just said, you know, Abram and Lot and their families and their people and stuff just came back to where they were. But no, that text is very, that's a choice that they made those things. And they could have just let us get, like, chapter 13 is not that long. We could have just gone into chapter 14 and been reminded of Sodom and Gomorrah. But they chose to point out that these folks are going to get nuked and it's because they're truly awful people. But as I sat and as I let this story come over me and as I let this story come over me just to experience what it's supposed to be about, not what it's telling me. Trust me, there's lots of stuff that it could be telling me and I'm hoping that I can communicate to you too. But what I really wanted to do was sit in both what these folks are doing, specifically Abram and Lot, but also kind of a throwback from what I talked about in Genesis 12. In Genesis 12, I talked about three audiences. Abram, because it is a recounting of his life. There is something that's being told about God and people and all that in the sheer recounting of Abram's life. There is the future in which we have not seen the complete fulfillment of these promises given to Abram. And so we look forward to seeing that day come. And then you had the middle audience, the audience that lives after these events have taken place, but before they've kind of been codified into the Hebrew scriptures. Like, these are the people who are wandering, lost, and getting these texts written down for the first time and collected and read and being reminded of them. And there is a part of this that as I read this, I'm fascinated at the life, the choices that are being made by Lot and Abram. But I couldn't help but read this text from the perspective of the middle people, the people that are in that middle audience. So I'm going to start reading in verse, let's start with 8. And I'm going to go to 13. If I'm feeling froggy, I might continue that. We will get to the stuff that happens after that, but I might wait for that. So let's just see where it goes. See where the Spirit takes me, as it were. Then Abram said to Lot, "Let there be no strife between you and me, and between your herdsmen and my herdsmen, for we are kinsmen. Is not the whole land before you? Separate yourself from me. If you take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if you take the right hand, then I will go to the left." And Lot lifted up his eyes and saw that the Jordan Valley was well watered everywhere, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt in the direction of Zoar. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So Lot chose for himself all the Jordan Valley, and Lot journeyed east. Thus they separated from each other. Abram settled in the land of Canaan, while Lot settled among the cities of the valley, and moved his tent as far as Sodom. Now the men of Sodom were wicked, great sinners against the Lord. Yeah, we will stop there. I want to talk about this. I want to talk about Abram's response and Lot's response. Lot is the obvious one. Lot, we're straight up, if this is a spot where there's been some pointed discussions about how awful the people of Sodom are and how God is about to just wipe Sodom and Gomorrah off the earth. Having Lot make this choice is super interesting because it's letting us know without directly saying it, Lot's not a good dude here. Lot is not like this misguided good guy. He's not been led astray. He is intentionally making a choice. They are standing in a desert. And he looks and he sees, oh, that part looks awesome. That part has a river. That part has greenery. That part reminds me of everything I loved back when we were in Egypt. I want all of that part. He doesn't say, I'm going to take some of that and you can take the rest of it so that we're both on good land. He says, I'm taking all of that. Lot is easy to understand. The best we're going to get from Lot, if you want to give some kind of hope to Lot, the best we can hope for is that he's just doing what's best for his family. But then again, remember how this started. Let there be no strife between you and me and between your herdsmen and my herdsmen, for we are kinsmen. One translation of the word that's used there is brothers. Like, Abram's straight up saying, we are family. And the fact that this idea of you pick first, we're family, why are we fighting about this, ends up with Lot going, I want the good stuff. You can, kick sand, quite literally. Yeah, we're painting a picture of Lot not being a good guy here. But Abram, in the first place, he actually surprises me. And it's hard for me to say that he surprises me because we're traveling on such well-trod ground, but he really did surprise me here because, I want to intentionally make, remember that these are human. These are human people. Abram said to Lot, let there be no strife between us. He basically said, he's opening the door that says, you pick first. You got this. Which is nice and great. And then, again, remember what happened just before this. He is standing on the place where God told him, all this land, it's yours. I'm giving it to you. Then he went to Egypt, and God proved, no, seriously, when I said I'm going to bless you, I'm really going to bless you, and I'm going to take care of you. Now get back there, because I'm going to show you some things. He could have banked on that. He could have pointed to that altar and said, that's literally where God said, this is mine. That, yeah, you're a family, and so we're all part of this, but this is mine? Did God give it to you? No, he gave it to me, and so I'm going to tell you to go over here. Instead, he just said, no, you go wherever you want. Wherever you're going to be, I'll go the other place. This moment for Abram is shocking because I know other stories that we've yet to see in Abram's life. Stories about how God makes a promise and then he says, yeah, God promised that, but it's not looking like it's going to happen that way. So I'm going to take steps to make sure that it happens so that God's promise is fulfilled. Remember those stories? We'll get there. So Abram here, really seeming to trust in God, it really does demonstrate how much of an impact that the events of Genesis 12 had on him. We know that as time passes, he's going to fall back into the patterns of, okay, yeah, God promised that, but is he really going to do that? Or am I going to have to do something? Like, he's going to fall back into that because we all do with a long enough timeline. But in this moment, he is still just reveling in what he saw God do on his behalf. And so in this moment, he's kind of just saying, No, I know God's got me, and I'm going to trust that whatever God gives me, it's going to be from Him, and He's already proven a bunch of times that He's not messing around. So, yeah, take whatever you want. If it's supposed to be mine, God will give it to me. If it's not, then you can just have it. What's the skin off my back for that? And this right here is where I remember that the audience of this is comprised largely of that middle people. The people who probably still remember when Moses struck the rock and made water because they were just complaining too hard and talking about how great their life in Egypt really was. And that line right there, how great their life in Egypt was, no matter what your translation of the exact words of that is that, yeah, everyone is pretty clear on the fact that the wandering people of Israel were very much complaining and saying, gosh, I wish we could have stayed in Egypt. It was so nice there. And that brought my attention to when Lot looked at the Jordan Valley. Like, yeah, he compared it to Eden, but he also compared it to what? The land of Egypt. Now, that could just be a throwaway line, unless you remember the audience that this was written to. And you can also feel a little bit of the sting in that when it says, let there be no strife between you and me. Because depending on your translation, that word strife can also mean something else. It can mean quarreling. And if you think back to that rock and how Moses struck it, and you remember what he called that place. If you go back, well, if you go forward to the book of Exodus, and he called the name of the place Massa and Meribah because of the quarreling of the people of Israel and because they tested the Lord by saying, is the Lord among us or not? Here in Genesis 13, when he is writing to a people that have literally just had a place named for how bad they were quarreling, the text says, then Abram said to Lot, let there be no strife between you and me, between your herdsmen and my herdsmen, for we are kinsmen. And it's the undercurrent, the foundation upon which this is built in, is that if God has given all this to me, then that means he's given it to you. That means he's given it to all of us. That means we can trust him because look what he just did. And when we see Lot being tied together with these people, with the text clearly says, these are not good people. These are not the people you want to be associated with, because by the time this story is done, they're going to be done and dusted. Gosh, it seems a little bit hard to hear when Lot went after the Jordan River Valley because it was like Egypt. Man, I had to feel that for them. I had to feel that hurt. And I had to feel that knife twist of those words and really sit on that for a minute. I don't have any great application for this. Like, you know, I'm continuing to prove that this is the weirdest Christian devotional you're ever going to get. I don't really have a great takeaway as far as to how we can step into faith like this, or what life should look like if you believe God the way Abram believes God here. I don't, because man, I'm going to tell you, I can't do this a lot. And even when I do it, it's with a lot of hard work, a lot of remembrance, and a lot of people looking over me saying, hey, Mike, that stuff you talk about, you need to live it here because you're not. Because Abram can just step aside here. He can open that door and say, Lot, take whatever you want. Because he has confidence. It doesn't matter what Lot takes. It doesn't matter where he sets up shop. Abram in this moment knows that whatever God's giving him, he's going to get. Whether it's now or later or eventually, or maybe it looks different, maybe it looks the same, who knows? He just knows that whatever God's going to give him, it's exactly what God's supposed to give him, because he's proven already to be a promise-keeping God. And I said I wanted to go back and finish reading the rest of the chapter, and I want to do that here. We'll start in verse 14. The Lord said to Abram, after Lot had separated from him, "Lift up your eyes and look from the place where you are, northward and southward and eastward and westward. For all the land that you see, I will give to you and to your offspring forever. I will make your offspring as the dust of the earth, so that if one can count the dust of the earth, your offspring also can be counted. Arise, walk through the length and breadth of the land, for I will give it to you." So Abram moved his tent and came and settled by the oaks of Mamre, which are in Hebron. And there he built an altar to the Lord. As soon as Lot has gone and taken the choicest lands and claimed all of it for himself, and now Canaan wouldn't be a complete dust bowl, but when you're talking about this, he just stepped out of the Negev, which is pretty much a desert. And he's come from a desert. He's gone to a dry, arid climate, and he's looking at this good land that literally got taken from him. And there, with his stuff, he's lost Lot. Lot's gone off already. God says, "Look up, lift up your eyes, and look from the place where you are. Now, remember." In verse 10, when Abram said, "Pick whatever you want," verse 10 it says, "And Lot lifted up his eyes and saw the Jordan Valley." When you see that, when you know that part, where they were standing, Lot lifted up his eyes and saw that place. So when God comes back and says, "Lift up your eyes and look from the place where you are, northward and southward and eastward and westward, for all the land you see, I will give to you and to your offspring." All the land he can see includes the spot that Lot saw. Man, I want to have this kind of faith. This kind of faith that says I can just trust God. He told me I'm going to have this, and so I know that I'm going to have this. And I'm not going to worry about and complain about, you know, the fact that Lot took the best place, because the place that I've been given is the one given me by God. I want to be there. I'm not. I'm decidedly not, in a lot of different ways. I think it comes down to just remembering over and over again to keep these stories with a closeness that helps us remember. Because again, like I said, this is a shining moment for Abram. He surprised me with how quickly he just fell into, "I trust God. I trust God and the promises he gave." Because this is literally a recounting of the promise that he gave in Genesis 12. Like that thing that I cited that said God promised that he was going to give Abram this land. This is a recounting of it. It's a repetition, an expounding actually, because I think the reason that this is it clarified, says, you know, the whole northward, southward, eastward, westward part, I think that's there because he wanted to remind Abram and to clarify to Abram, "No, seriously, Lot took that place, but all of this is yours." And I think Abram believed it because he just saw what God did. And I'm not there yet, but I'm continually surrounding myself with the stories of God proving over and over again that he is a promise-keeping God. And if there's anything that I can say that I think that all these rereads have done, it's that I don't want to quarrel anymore. I don't mean that I don't want to stand up for things. I don't want to follow after God, or I don't want to, you know, I don't want to make it sound like I'm just going to lay down and say, you know, just look heresy in the face and go, "Okay, whatever you want, bud. At least we're all following Jesus." Like, I think what I'm talking about is just, I get so caught up in how bad we're fighting, how bad we're complaining, And I forget that we're kinsmen. I forget God is way bigger than circumstance. I forget all of that. And when I forget that, that's when I quarrel. That's when I fight. That's when I compare. That's where I get nasty. And I just realize that God is bigger than me. He's bigger than my understanding of him, which is freeing. Like Abraham looked at the good and choice land over there that Lot took, he could have complained, he could have cited God's promise. But instead he goes, no, you take what you want. The more I thought about it, I don't want to pontificate on that more. I don't want to make it clean and make it easy, because it's not a clean and easy statement. I don't know what it means for you to not quarrel, to trust God enough to not worry about, you know, defending God when God doesn't need defending. I just got done rewatching a video from a guy I saw. It's Dr. Derwin L. Gray, and he's just talking about how we get so worried about the culture war, and we have to defend Jesus against the liberals, and defend Jesus against this, and defend Jesus against the culture, defend Jesus. And he goes, man, sometimes don't you just want to realize that, you know, God's the one who, you know, set the stars. Christ's the one who conquered death. Does he really need defending from us? I don't want to quarrel, because I think quarreling has a connotation of the best context I could give would be the context of what those middle people were doing when that place got called quarreling, just complaining and backbiting and, you know, throwing people under the bus. It's like, oh, those people are the worst people. And I just want to be kind, and I want to let God show over and over again that he is a promise keeping God. I want to let God defend God. And I want to just walk in the knowledge that whatever he gives me is going to come out good, whether it's something that he actively gives me or it's something that he's going to redeem that life handed me. In either way, I want to be in that place where Abram builds another altar to a promise-keeping God who he is confident in, confident enough to let his no-good nephew pick the choicest land. We've got some cool stuff coming up. We're still working with our friends at Mythos & Inc. You're going to probably hear an interview with one of our friends from the Geek at Arms podcast soon, because he also contributed to Thy Geekdom Come. And we're going to keep going through Genesis. And even when stories that I don't want to talk about come up, we're going to talk about them, because these stories matter here at the Barden Bible.